This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. Coming up, in the midst of a public feud with two GOP senators, who are stepping down, by the way, from the Senate, President Trump attended the weekly Republican Senators' Policy Lunch yesterday. The purpose was to discuss tax reform, but that was not the focal point of their conversation. What was? Well, Oklahoma Senator Jim Inhofe was there, and he'll be here in just a moment to tell us about yesterday's powwow with President Trump. Also, further developments on Congress looking into the Obama Department of Justice and the Russians. Ohio Congressman and founding chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, Jim Jordan, has the latest on that. And yesterday's decision by the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals to reinstate a lower court's order for the federal government to facilitate a 17-year-old illegal immigrant's abortion was unfortunately carried out this morning before the Trump administration could appeal the decision to the Supreme Court. FRC's Travis Weber is here with those details. The website is TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, well, you can keep up with me at T. Perkins. All right, amid the drama surrounding Senator Bob Corker, Republican from Tennessee, and Jeff Flake, Republican of Arizona, who announced yesterday he's not going to seek reelection, the GOP senators met yesterday with Donald Trump for a closed-door lunch. Here's how President Trump described yesterday's meeting to reporters earlier today.
We have actually great unity in the Republican Party. Yesterday I was, oh, that's okay. Look, you know, they have to do their thing. We have great unity. If you look at what happened yesterday at the meeting, we had, I guess, virtually every senator, including John McCain. We had a great conversation yesterday, John McCain and myself, about the military. I think we had I called it a love fest. It was almost a love fest. Maybe it was a love fest. But we standing ovations. There is great unity. I mean, if you look at the Democrats with Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, that's a mess. There's great unity in the Republican Party.
Well, joining us now to talk about that love fest is Senator Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma, one of the leading conservative voices of the Senate and a great friend of the Family Research Council, and he joins us now. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Always good to be with you. As few friends as I have, I go where they are.
Well, Senator, let's talk about that love fest. Would you describe it as a love fest?
You know, it really was. In fact, I'd use that word, that characterization, actually before he did. I was so shocked. And I think a lot of our listeners right now would be also, because he's had such a bum rap, and the media is not going to put any interpretation on it except the negative. So now when I walk down the halls, they talk about, well, you've got two people leaving the party now. It means the party is falling apart. No, it isn't. It means that we are united. If they could have seen, I think the Trump had a very good description of what happened. Everyone was standing up. He was interrupted with applause. I've never seen that before. And this is just our regular weekly conference luncheon. So he talked about everything, just all off the cuff. And, of course, he was concerned about the things that, you know, what had happened in Niger and of course, with the threats that we have out there right now that we're dealing with, tax reform. I mean, the tax reform is going to be a big, big thing. And everyone is so excited that finally, after talking about it and not doing anything about it, we're going to get it done. So the two Republicans exiting is not going to have any negative effect. And I think, you know, it's so sensitive when you're down with a majority of two. You've got to get a majority vote. And I think that they will actually be voting with us, even though there's just personally they don't like Trump.
Well, you know, Senator Inhofe, it is interesting when you are one-on-one or in a small setting with the president. He's much different than the way the media cast him to be.
Oh, it is. And, you know, he's such a warm person. I had an experience, Tony, way back a year ago, and that was back when he was our nominee, but he hadn't won the election yet. I got a phone call on October 9th, and it was Trump. I didn't know the guy, and he said, would you come up here to New York and visit with me tomorrow? I said, yeah, I'm not doing anything. So I went up, and when I saw the people that were surrounding him, they had a table with 14 people. I was one of the 14. Each one was in an area specialty. Mine happened to be military. but they also were, they had health care and they had energy and all that. And so he was actually at that point, and this was a year ago, he was actually taking notes, asking the right questions, and he was really a quick learner. The guy has changed his position in a very tactful way where he made some blunders during the campaign. And I'll tell you, I've turned into one of his biggest supporters, and I didn't think that would happen. You know, if someone told me a year ago when we had 17 Republicans running for president, I'd say, yeah, he'd be number 17. I think maybe God had something else in mind, and he was there for a purpose now.
I think something that's important for people to hear what you said, because it's been my experience as well, is that he actually listens. He asks questions, very insightful questions, and he listens. So he is teachable, meaning that he's taken on a big job as president of the United States and literally the spokesman for the free world, and he's trying to learn, and he's learning. He's teachable, and I think that's a very key attribute of a good leader.
I think it is, and he's also, and this is one of the things that we saw in Ronald Reagan, he's willing to get into complicated and controversial subjects. For example, you've heard me say on your program that America is in the most threatened position today we've been in the history of this country. And the reason is, and I've also said I look back wistfully at the Cold War, we now have not just two superpowers fighting, but we have all these countries now developing capabilities. Just imagine North Korea on July 4th fired an ICBM, and since that time they've downgraded and changed the time that country, run by a mentally deranged person, is going to be able to hit an American city with a weapon. And now that's a scary thought. As tragic as it was back in 9/11, just imagine a city, New York City or St. Louis, Missouri, being hit by a weapon. And so he's willing to talk about that and to incite the people so that we can now, after 8 years of degrading our military under Obama, we now can start rebuilding, repairing, so that we can defend America adequately and our allies at the same time. So he knows where his priorities are. He believes in getting in a position where we are the leader of the free world again, as we once were.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday afternoon. Senator Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma, my guest in this first segment. Senator, you talked about the military, which obviously an area of great focus and concern of yours. The president said he had a conversation with John McCain about that. Is John McCain coming around to support the president, do you think, or is he going to continue to oppose him on some of these things?
No, you know, he was opposing, and it just all seemed to change yesterday. And I guess I'm not divulging anything when I say all of us, except the two that are dropping out, were standing and applauding, and that included John McCain. And I think that the president understands that John McCain and those of us, because I've been ranking member on the Senate Armed Services Committee, I know the problems that we have right now. I know that even the president's budget is not adequate to take care of the problems that we have. How many people listening to us right now know that only 30% of our ground brigades actually work, that of our F-18s that the Marines use, 62% of them don't work, because they have not been maintained over the last 8 years. And so we have a really serious, serious problem. And now I see the president coming around and agreeing with McCain that we're going to have to do something about sequestration. And, you know, if anyone out there is listening who doesn't believe what Obama did to the military, just remember the policy he had. He said, for every nickel that we put in to try to beef up the military, we have to put the same nickel into the social programs. Right. And that's not what the Constitution says. Our number one responsibility is to defend America. Well, we're back now with the Constitution.
Yeah, and that's it couldn't come at a more needful time, given how dangerous the world has become. Let's shift gears just a little bit, Senator Inhofe, because one of the next initiatives that the Republican Congress is going to take on, I think it's essential that they succeed, that is the tax reform. The Republicans plan to release their bill on November the 1st after an expected House vote this Thursday, tomorrow, on the Senate-approved budget plan. What do you think the prospects are for accomplishing this tax reform?
Well, first of all, it's going to happen. And then a lot of people don't, they look at some of the basic ingredients, and they're great. Lowering the individual tax rate, it's actually a tax cut. That's what our president wants to call it. So people have a clear understanding. A reform can mean making adjustments. A cut means a cut. And when you bring also down the corporate tax rate, that's going to open up the economy. We know what's going to happen because we remember, and some of us are old enough to remember and were around when Ronald Reagan did his tax cuts. And the other side would sometimes say, well, yeah, it may have, it did not reduce the deficit. The problem was by cutting the marginal rates, Ronald Reagan dramatically increased the revenues from there. The problem is Congress came along and spent all the increase. Well, we'll have the safeguards in there so that won't happen again, and we can really look at accomplishing something over a period of time. 10 years probably will be what they use. Mm-hmm. But the tax rate, look at the death tax. When I go around the state of Oklahoma in the rural areas, that's the number one issue they have so that they don't lose their farms.
Right, exactly.
They've had for such a long time. So it's going to be great. I want to just make one comment about Africa, because I was over there at the time that this whole thing happened in Niger. And I'd just like to remind people, for those who say, well, we shouldn't have had troops in Africa, as you know, I've spent more time in Africa than any senator in history, and we've had a mission going for a long period of time. Well, in Niger, we only had, it's true, we had 800 troops, but if you look at all of the troops collectively that we had in Africa, in that huge continent, it's 6,000, but 4,000 of those are in Djibouti, where they're actually assigned to other places. And so it's really down to about 2,000, less than 750 that are used right now in the embassies where they have to have a military staff. So we have 1,300 people for the entire continent. And if we allow the Boko Haram and all of the Al-Shabaab, all of these things to fester over there, we'll be in the same situation we were in Afghanistan back before the war. So it's very important that people understand that we are, again, becoming the world leader in the free world, and we have to do that. We've got to demonstrate clearly what we're willing to do to keep our world safe. So anyone having doubts about the African action, have them call me. I'd love to talk to them.
All right, Senator. Well, I am with you, and I hope that this administration will succeed in rebuilding our nation's military that was really in many, many ways decimated by the previous administration. Senator, thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Johnny.
All right, Senator Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. Okay, coming up next, Republicans have launched 3 investigations into the Obama-era uranium deal with the Russians and the FBI's handling of Hillary Clinton's email scandal. I've been saying this all week. It really does look like the Democrats, who are hoping to discredit the Trump administration on this whole Russian connection, were playing Russian roulette. And guess what? It looks like they're going to lose. Coming up next, Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio joins us. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
We've gone from give me liberty or give me death to take care of me, please. What has happened to the American spirit? Our colleges were once bastions of free speech. Now they're bastions of speech codes. Our culture once rewarded independence. Now it rewards victimhood. Parents once taught their kids how to fend for themselves. Now, any parent who tries may get a visit from the police. In a talk about his new book, Not a Daycare, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, takes a hard look at what's happening around the country, including demands for safe spaces and trigger warnings at universities like Yale, Brandeis, and Oberlin, and digs in his heels against the sad and dangerous dumbing down of the American spirit. Dr. Piper has become known for his passionate defense of intellectual freedom, and he challenges the intolerant tolerance of today's academic community. Go to frc.org/speakers to watch. Again, that's frc.org/speakers. In a free country like ours, it's easy to forget that slavery still exists. Human beings are being trafficked and sold for sex against their will. Human trafficking is a horrifying scourge that continues to haunt America, particularly through the proliferation of illegal online transactions between traffickers and buyers. As part of the FRC Speaker Series, Congresswoman Ann Wagner discusses congressional anti-human trafficking initiatives and how the conservative community can best be engaged in combating this horrific crime. Congresswoman Wagner, who introduced highly anticipated legislation in April that allows states and victims to fight online sex trafficking, focuses on online sex trafficking via Backpage.com and other websites, and confronting the demand for sex trafficking in American culture. Find out more about Congresswoman Wagner's recent legislation and ways you can help stop trafficking at frc.org/speakers. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Hear Mr. Arnakis discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. All right, yesterday, House Republicans announced it's opening an investigation into actions the Obama administration Justice Department took during last year's presidential election and prior to that. There was, we talked about it earlier in the week, about Russians and uranium and kickbacks and the Clinton family. It sounds like the mob or something, but they were, so many different connections. You know, the Democrats would have done well to just to leave the Russia thing alone, but trying to suggest that there was this collaboration between the Trump campaign and the Russians, and then now we're finding out this dossier that was put together by Trump was funded by the DNC. The Clinton campaign funded part of it. Well, now House Judiciary Committee Chairman Bob Goodlatte and House Oversight and Government Reform Committee Chairman Trey Gowdy said they're going to probe into this and get to the heart of the matter. Well, joining me now is Congressman Jim Jordan. He is a part of the Judiciary Committee and the Oversight and Government Reform Committee. He is also the founding chairman of the House Freedom Caucus. He represents the 4th Congressional District of the Buckeye State. Jim, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony.
So is there a hot trail here that Congress may be on that as it pertains to the Democrats, Clinton, and Russia?
Definitely cries out for investigation. Think about what we know. And you were saying these very things, Tony. Hillary Clinton and the Democrat National Committee pay Fusion GPS to put together the dossier. The dossier, according to reports, becomes the catalyst for the FBI to investigate Trump, President Trump. We now learn that earlier the FBI was looking into this entire Uranium One deal, kickbacks, extortion, bribery, all these things associated with it. And yet they were looking into all that. Those things took place, and yet they didn't tell anyone. Didn't tell Congress. Didn't tell the American people. Most importantly, they didn't tell the agent. It looks like they didn't tell the agencies who were responsible for deciding whether this deal could go forward or not.
Which is,
and they also told
deal.
The informant, "You're not allowed to talk either." And here's the irony in all this, Tony. Guess who was running the FBI at the time that this decision was made not to tell anybody?
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, and guess who was at the, according to the Hill, who was in charge of this overall investigation at Justice Department? Rod Rosenstein. So
I don't know. I mean, if this doesn't cry out for investigation, I don't know what does, and that's why we're going to look into these things and see if we can get some answers for the people of this great country.
I mean, this is a pretty significant deal, stepping back to this issue with the Russians and the uranium sale and gaining control of a company here in the United States. I mean, this goes back to 2009. And as you said, this information was not shared with the agencies that gave approval for these transactions to take place. This is a national security issue, is it not?
Well, you would think, but it certainly smells. It certainly, I think, warrants an investigation. Don't forget this either. The guys at Fusion GPS who put together the dossier have taken the fifth, according to reports. So they were brought in front of the Intel Committee, took the fifth. And it's interesting, with folks who get around Secretary Clinton, they seem to take the fifth. Brian Pagliano, who set up the now famous Clinton private server, took the fifth in front of the Benghazi. I was sitting in the room when he came in and pled the fifth. Him and his four lawyers came in and said, I'm not going to answer any questions about this. Just like these folks from Fusion GPS, Christopher Steele and all, who are not going to give us answers either. And the guy who does want to give us answers, he's under a gag order. He's not allowed to talk. I mean, so this is time for Jeff Sessions and the Justice Department to say, hey, Mr. Informant, who worked on who had information about this extortion and bribery and all the things that were going on, the kickbacks and everything that supposedly went on, and he wants to talk, let's let him talk. So we'll see as we move forward on this investigation.
All right, Congressman Jim Jordan, let me ask you something, because I know this is on the minds of our listeners. You mentioned Benghazi. You were there for that. The Lois Lerner in the IRS scandal. I mean, the House Oversight Committee has had a busy 8 years looking into so many of the Fast and Furious. I mean, you name it. There were so many scandals. But will these investigations lead to something where the others did not?
Let's hope so. I mean, again, if that's where the facts take us. But, I mean, you know this, Tony. Congress can't put anyone in jail. Only the Justice Department can. And, frankly, the Justice Department had better get to work, I think, here on answering some of our questions. And, well, here's a great example. On July 27th, we sent the Justice Department, Mr. Rosenstein and Mr. Sessions, we sent them, Republicans on the House Judiciary Committee, sent them a letter saying, we think it's time for a special counsel to look into Clinton, Comey, Lynch, Fusion GPS, Uranium One, all this stuff that we've been talking about. We think we need a special counsel. To date, 3 months later, not one answer, no reply, no response from
nothing.
The Justice Department. So Jeff Sessions needs to figure out what the heck is going on here with this and give us an answer. And we even met with Mr. Sessions, four Republicans on the judiciary, sat down with Mr. Sessions, and we asked him and the staff that were in the room, you know, when are you going to give us an answer on this? And they said, we don't know. So
let me say that's troubling.
It's very troubling. It is very troubling because here's where it all comes down to. American voters hate a lot of things about Washington, but probably at the top of the list is when they believe and they perceive, I think appropriately so, that there are two standards or that there's a double standard.
Mm-hmm.
One standard for you and me and us regular folks and all the listeners who listen to your show and all kinds of folks around that. One standard for all of us. But a different standard if you're part of the politically connected class like Comey and Lynch and Lerner and Clinton, that drives them, and it should drive them crazy. So that's what this is really about. It's about equal treatment under the law, and that's why we have to do these investigations, get to the truth, and we have to have a Justice Department who's going to help us.
Well, I would think the Trump administration – I mean, law and order, that we ought to be able to get something done with those who break the law now that we have a change of administrations. I would certainly hope. Certainly hope.
All right.
Congressman Jim Jordan, thanks so much for joining
us. Thank you, Tony. Take care, buddy.
All right. Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio. Man, I tell you what, that's I did not realize that they had sent this letter back in July to the Justice Department. Wow. Still a lot of work to be done. And here's part of the problem is that the stalling tactics that the Democrats have used in the confirmation of so many of these figures, that you have so many holdovers, and they don't want to pull back the curtain on this. All right, coming up next, an illegal immigrant teen in federal custody at the center of an abortion battle tragically terminated the life of her baby this morning. We'll talk about it next.
Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. All right, a federal appeals court ruled yesterday. As you'll recall, we brought this up. It was breaking news during the program yesterday. A federal appeals court, the D.C. Circuit, ruled that the lower court decision, basically sent it back to the lower courts, allowing that ruling to stand, which said that the Trump administration must facilitate an abortion for an illegal teen immigrant. Now, the administration was prepared to challenge that at the Supreme Court, but tragically this morning, those wanting to, the ACLU and others trying to facilitate this abortion for the 17-year-old girl, succeeded before the Trump administration could appeal the decision before the Supreme Court. Joining us now to discuss the matter is Travis Weber. He is the director of the Center for Religious Liberty here at the Family Research Council. Travis, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony.
I mean, this all happened very quickly. This girl, in, according to court records, identified as Jane Doe, was about 15 weeks pregnant. She's in Texas, Brownsfield, Texas. And Texas does not allow abortions after 20 weeks, and so they were working to try to get this done very quickly. And it looks like those that were trying to secure this abortion for her moved very quickly early this morning to basically prohibit the Trump administration from succeeding in an appeal to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very sad situation. You know, the ACLU and others trying to really use this case to expand abortion access, full stop. You know, they use this to do that, and this poor girl's really a pawn in the situation. You know, now she did have a judge approve the abortion and has a guardian appointed, but she is in a vulnerable spot. You know, comes to the United States, presents herself at the border, taken into custody, really doesn't know anyone without help or assistance. And, you know, the U.S. government, the Supreme Court has ruled multiple times, has an interest in promoting life, promoting childbirth, and there's no reason that the court should have just steamrolled over that interest here when the government was trying to do that for this girl and her baby.
And looking at the D.C. Circuit Court, the ruling was 6-3. All of those voting to allow the lower court decision to stand were appointed by Democratic presidents. Clearly, this is a partisan ideological issue. Judge Patricia Millay, I think is how you pronounce her name, claims that she wrote the majority opinion. She said there's not a remotely constitutional sufficient reason for depriving Jane Doe of any control over this most intimate and life-altering decision. The court today correctly recognized that Jane Doe's unchallenged right under the Due Process Clause affords this 17-year-old a modicum of the dignity, sense of self-worth, and control over her own destiny that life seems to have so far denied her, end quote. And then, well, she goes on to say, remember, we're talking about a child here, which is unbelievable because that's exactly what we're talking about, a child. But there's even in the dissenting opinion that was written is a recognition that, whoa, wait a minute. Someone who is here illegally does not necessarily have all these constitutional rights, like a constitutional right to an abortion.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The interest in promoting life that I'd already mentioned is one big component to this case. But the other big component is whether someone like this who shows up at the border does not properly enter the United States but is taken into custody and thus not considered to have entered under immigration law is not automatically entitled to rights just by presenting themselves at the border. And there's a long history of cases deciding this and ruling on these issues. And Judge Henderson, in dissent, really does a good job of laying this out and says, look, it's not a foregone conclusion that she has a constitutional right here. This really ties back into the real activist, the problems with judicial activism with a lot of these judges on the D.C. Circuit. You know, because you had an en banc ruling here that reversed summarily a panel decision earlier, 2-1 mm-hmm. panel decision from the circuit. And Judge Millett, that you quoted her earlier, wrote the concurring opinion to this en banc ruling. She was the dissenter in the panel, pro-abortion activist, and you had the other judges going along with her decision. In dissent, Judge Kavanaugh says he had crafted the overruled panel decision. He says in dissent from this most recent decision, he says, look, you know, we're trying to be reasonable and cautious here, and the majority is just sort of running out of control and steamrolling into an area of law that is by far from clear. And so really, you know, we have a legal problem here and sort of the pro-abortion activism, but you also have just judicial activism. The judges are not deciding the law, but they're just promoting and pushing their own policies from the bench.
Well, and if you kind of follow this trail, and if you are logically consistent, then if they have a right to an abortion, I mean, again, we're talking about an illegal immigrant into this country, a minor. If they have a right to an abortion, do they have a Second Amendment right? Do they have the right to vote? I mean, where do you draw the line? Travis, we're up against a break. Can you stick around? I want to finish this conversation on the other side of the break.
Sure.
All right. Travis is going to stick around. I hope you will as well. We're going to continue this conversation, then we'll go to the phone lines. Very significant case. Significant in a couple of ways. One, that the Trump administration was really going to the mat here to protect a principle here of not entangling the government in abortion and to look out for the best interest of the girl. Now, the girl was free to leave at any time and return to her home country and have an abortion. But we saw what was really behind that. We're going to talk more about it when we come back. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org.
In a free country like ours, it's easy to forget that slavery still exists. Human beings are being trafficked and sold for sex against their will. Human trafficking is a horrifying scourge that continues to haunt America, particularly through the proliferation of illegal online transactions between traffickers and buyers. As part of the FRC Speaker Series, Congresswoman Ann Wagner discusses congressional anti-human trafficking initiatives and how the conservative community can best be engaged in combating this horrific crime. Congresswoman Wagner, who introduced highly anticipated legislation in April that allows states and victims to fight online sex trafficking, focuses on online sex trafficking via Backpage.com and other websites, and confronting the demand for sex trafficking in American culture. Find out more about Congresswoman Wagner's recent legislation and ways you can help stop trafficking at frc.org/speakers. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at TPerkins. If you happen to miss anything on your way home, well, you can check it out later. It's all archived at TonyPerkins.com. And later this week, I'll be in Oklahoma, actually at the Oklahoma Wesleyan University. I'll be speaking at their chapel service this Friday for their homecoming. So if I know we've got some listeners in that area, so I'll be back in my old stomping grounds of Oklahoma. Let's return here to our discussion about the unfortunate turn of events after the court interjected itself again in ordering the government, the Trump administration, to facilitate the abortion of a 17-year-old girl, Travis Weber, who is the director of FRC's Center for Religious Liberty, joins me. Travis, thanks for sticking around.
Sure, Tony.
All right, let's go back to what I was talking about earlier before the break, and that was this idea that if you're logically consistent, which I know that's a big assumption with the left, but you can't pick and choose rights. I mean, when it comes to, you know, if you're an illegal immigrant and you want to claim that they have certain rights, I mean, you're opening a door for them to make claims that they have other rights, are you not?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is really a rule of law issue. And if we look back in the long history of how courts have looked at the issue of when people come to the country and present themselves at our borders, what rights are they entitled to? I mean, the very fact that we're considering this, you know, we have to remember to point out, because the United States looks at immigration and borders from a civilized perspective. We try to care for everyone, but you need to keep order, too, and recognize you need to protect yourself. And so that's why we don't automatically give the right to the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms, to have the freedom of expression in the same way everyone else has, or freedom from Fourth Amendment violations or trial by jury. So, you know, someone shows up at the border and not lawfully enter to the country, they don't automatically get these rights. And abortion is no different. Yet the court, this D.C. Circuit en banc opinion, violated that principle and, again, engaged in abortion exceptionalism and provided an exception for abortion and said this girl, when the law is not clear on this issue, is entitled to this abortion. So this is really, you know, just something that shows, again, the abortion exceptionalism and violates the very principle of the rule of law here.
In fact, there were, I think, 8 attorney generals that filed a brief in this case in support of the administration's position. It was led by Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. And they all weighed in on the side of the unborn baby, making it clear that if the courts granted this girl's request, there's no limit to, as you pointed out, what illegal immigrants could demand. In fact, to quote from their brief, it said, in this case, plaintiffs asked the court to declare that the U.S. Constitution confers on unlawfully present aliens the absolute right to an abortion on demand, even when they have no ties to this country other than the fact that their arrest while attempting to cross the border unlawfully. And again, it appears that there's this one issue, as you say, abortion exceptionalism, where they will go out of their way to try to push this pro-abortion agenda.
Yeah, you know, and so if we think about this and sort of why it's important to the case, we need to go back to the incentive that this ruling is creating. There's evidence in the record that this girl in this case knew that she was pregnant when she made the trip to the United States. If this ruling now puts everyone on notice around the world that if they just present themselves at the United States border and are taken into custody without properly entering the country, they're going to be automatically entitled to an abortion. And that's why it's so radical and so unlawful and out of accord with our precedents, even our abortion cases that, you know, I would argue are wrong, even out of step with those cases to rule this way. And this really has to be fixed going forward.
So what is the remedy here?
Well, the case at the emergency posture dealing with this girl because she went ahead and got the abortion, this stage of the case is in essence over. Now, the case itself is not disposed of yet. The ACLU did sue on behalf of other girls. We don't know who they are, but it's possible the case will continue. It could be decided at the merit stage, and that's the stage that a precedent would really be set. So, and we know that these folks who are trying to push abortion on demand, and another key fact of this case, this was an elective abortion. There's no evidence that this abortion was anything other than the girl saying, I just want to terminate this life. And so, you know, expanding that type of abortion, we know people, advocates pushing this. And so the fight will continue, whether it's in this case or another one like it.
Well, we'll be watching that very, very closely. Travis Weber, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Tony.
Travis Weber, director of the Center for Religious Liberty here at the Family Research Council. You know, folks, this goes back to the issue of the judicial nominees. This is why this is so critically important. And, you know, we're continuing to see the unprecedented obstruction by the Democrats led by Chuck Schumer in the Senate. And they know what's at stake here. In fact, Nancy Pelosi, last summer, or maybe it was last fall, it was right before the election, she made the comment that the only way they were able to accomplish things like, quote-unquote, marriage equality was through the courts. They knew they couldn't get it legislatively. The people would never support it. And so they accomplish all of this through the courts. That's how they promote abortion. That's how they got abortion. That's how they redefined marriage. That's how they're working to redefine human sexuality. It's all through the courts. That's why it's such a brutal battle over the courts. So let's open up the phone lines, 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. I'm going to go back kind of to our earlier discussion. We can wrap this into it. But President Trump, is he on the right track? You know, he's standing up to some of these rhinos, if you will, Republicans in name only. You know, Bob Corker, Jeff Flake, and they're backing down. You heard Senator Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma saying that, hey, They were giving him standing ovations. There's one thing I want to underscore that's very significant. How the media portrays the president, but how people who are actually spending time with the president see him. Much different. You heard that from Senator Inhofe. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Let's go, I tell you what, let's go to David in Oklahoma. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello. The gentleman you were speaking with, he might have answered my question, but I know you've spoken about the girl this week and last week, and I was never clear as to whether she wanted an abortion or it was being forced upon her. I believe he more or less said that she had elected to have it.
Yeah, it was an elective abortion, and here's the issue, is that she was a minor in federal custody, and when a minor is actually the majority writing in the opinion yesterday, acknowledging that she was a child, remember, this is a child, that, you know, certain decisions like this, which are life and death, which are irreversible, they either have to have parental consent, a parent to work with them, they didn't have a parent. They had a judge stepping in to make the decision, but the issue was that the administration, the Trump administration, because they had jurisdiction, custody over this girl, did not want to facilitate and entangle taxpayers and the federal government in abortion. Now, she was free to leave at any time and go back to her home country and obtain the abortion. So we don't know what kind of counseling she was getting in terms of who was suggesting she get the abortion. Was she getting all of the facts? That information is not known. But it was not forced on her from a standpoint of like they do in China. She wanted an elected abortion. So the bigger question was, when someone comes to this country illegally and they are detained by our government, do they have a right to tell the government that they want them to facilitate an abortion? So that was it, David. David, thanks so much for listening. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Nebraska, where Bob's on the line. Bob, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yeah. It looks to me like we missed an opportunity to just say, good president, send this young lady back. Yeah, send her back to Mexico. If necessary, find a citizen of Mexico to be her guardian, since she is a minor child. Because what we have done instead is set a precedent, but any minor in Mexico who wants some kind of a medical procedure, all they got to do is cross over and they've got it over on the side.
That's their point. They have now sent a message to the world, and she's not from Mexico. She's from another country. I think I read it was Guatemala. But you're actually right. They have put out a big billboard. Global billboard saying that, hey, you want an abortion, come to America, United States of America, illegally, and our government will be forced by the courts to facilitate it. Bob, absolutely right. Bob, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Ohio, where Joe is on the line. Joe, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Mr. Perkins. Thanks for taking my call. I would like to say I think Trump is on the right track 95% of the time. I don't agree with him all the time. Getting Neil Gorsuch approved was a huge win, and he's got to get rid of these Rhino Republicans. I mean, the Rhino Republicans approved every nomination that Obama put up, and that's where we the Democrats. You know, I hate their liberal caucus, but they always stick together, and then they're not going to approve any of Trump's appointees, and the Rhino Republicans approved all of Obama's appointees, and that's the difference. We've got to get these rhinos out of there. Judge Roy Moore is a big step in the right direction. Getting Marsha Blackburn in there in place of Corporal will be another huge step. The lady in Arizona in place of the snowflake is a great step in the right direction. But we've got to get Neil Gorsuch was huge. Judge Roy Moore was huge. We need to get more conservative judges in there. And I think Trump is wanting to nominate him. He's got a list of, 19 or 20 conservatives you'd like to appoint. There's a real good conservative up in Michigan. But these Rhino Republicans, they need to do, if they need 51 votes or, do away with the filibuster. I mean, I'm not a politician, so I don't know what the procedures are, but I know that I know Obama got all his people appointed, and I know that Trump's got very, very few of his appointed. So there's got to be some fault has to lie with the do-nothing Congress and the rhinos.
Oh, well, I mean, you hit the nail on the head, Joe. I mean, the Republicans basically roll over, most right. of them, where the Democrats will fight. And, you know, they're, I mean, it's just the truth. I mean, look at what Chuck Schumer is doing. He's making the Republicans, I mean, he is opposing them on all of these nominations and slowing down the process. And instead of exercising all of their ability, the Republicans are just kind of playing along. They could make this very painful for the Democrats to do this. And it could be excruciating. Now, the Democrats would do that to the Republicans. I just think, look, some things are worth fighting for. And I'll tell you, folks, I believe we are at a point. There's a window of opportunity here. We've talked about it many times to save this country. And we don't have a long time. And we've got to move. Now, we move within the boundaries of the law. We move within the boundaries of the Constitution. But we fight like we believe in what we're fighting for. And you're absolutely right, Joe, appreciate the call, absolutely right that it's time to get rid of the rhinos and get men and women of conviction who believe in this country, that believe America is an exceptional nation, and exceptional because of our Judeo-Christian foundation, a foundation worth fighting for, a foundation worth repairing. And we've got to preserve it for the generations yet to be born in this country. And so you are absolutely correct, my friend. Thanks so much for calling. In those places, and I talked about this yesterday, in those places where you've got rhinos, whether it's school boards, whether it's city councils, whether it's state legislatures, whether it's Congress, whether it's the Senate, now's the time to challenge them. Now is the time to challenge the status quo, because we don't have long. And I believe that we've got to get these judicial appointments through. And the president, his team has made, they've made stellar selections. And many of these nominations are just languishing because the Senate will not confirm them. All right, folks, we're out of time. Sorry I didn't get to the rest of the calls, folks, but thank you so much for listening to Washington Watch. Until next time. I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.